The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways you probably haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Questlove, and Cate Blanchett. In recent weeks, I talked to actor Dan Levy, director Ava DuVernay, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating.
I got a big heart, and I'm very forgiving, but, like, don't abuse it. It's been abused enough.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia.
Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to the one and only Ryan Seacrest.
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. It's getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine. And I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Wake that ass up.
Early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ NV, Charlamagne Tha God, Jess Hilarious. We are the Breakfast Club, and we got a special guest in the building.
Yes, indeed.
We have Ida Rodriguez.
Hey, I think I am the Latin person. What we call now? Latinx?
Latinx, right?
I think. Mm-hmm. I think I'm the Latin person that's been on the show the most. Mm. This is like my seventh time.
Oh, NV Dominican.
I know. He's on the weekend.
Dominican. Yeah. I think you and Fat Joe.
Me and Fat Joe.
Yeah, you and Fat Joe.
Fat Joe been up here a lot.
I mean, Fat Joe is Joey crack.
You never not working, Ida. New book, Legitimate Kid.
You know what? I was laughing because she said that books are the new disc record.
Yes.
Yeah.
They are.
And it is. Because I'm dissing my mama and daddy in this.
Oh, really? Jesus.
I know that's right.
Jesus.
It's a different diss.
I'm holding them accountable, but I'm not never diss my mom. My mom is my queen.
Why'd you call it Legitimate Kid?
Because kids in the hood are evil, and when I was little, a kid told me I was a bastard because I didn't have my father's last name.
Jesus.
And I found out what it meant, and then I felt less than, and so I went on a journey to find my legitimacy. And I want all the little kids that grow up in the hood that hear this, your daddy didn't sign your birth certificate. That doesn't make you legitimate. That term comes from prostitution. It has nothing to do with legitimacy. I mean, with parental presence in your life, it came.
You mean the term bastard?
Yeah, that came. Being a legitimate came from them saying children that were born to prostitutes were not legitimate. Mm. But then they weaponized that against people of color, poor people. And so I wanted to find out more about myself because that affected the way I dealt with men, you know, my life as a mom and all that stuff. And so I want everybody who reads that book to know that they are legitimate.
I know you said something back to the boy, though. What was the joke back to the boy? You had something for him.
Nah, you know, you know my joke. When I was a kid, I was meek. When I was little, yeah. This didn't happen till like, this was in elementary. I didn't get gully till middle school when I started, you know, peeping the pro wings. Mm-hmm. You're too young to know what that is.
Okay.
Pro she wings said, okay, are yeah, the you're sneakers right. from Payless that the poor people used to wear.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I had some Payless sneakers. They was cool.
Yeah, that was cool. When we was kids. Oh, wow. When we was kids, that was food stamps. Right?
You probably had them swagged out, though.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I wore the flare legs. Nobody could see that they was Payless shoes. Yeah, just the tip. You could see the tip sticking out.
But, oh.
Yeah.
Now, talk about the journey of finding your dad and finding your history.
So, you know what? I went to the Dominican Republic. I did the documentary. That's on HBO.
Yep.
And my father, you know, when I met my father asked me for money. And it was...
The first question?
It was not the first question, but it was probably like the fourth. And it was very painful because I just met him. And you know, I was really upset with him. I dissed him on stage. It was really, you know, he was DL, I was Monique.
Mm-hmm.
And it got ugly. I went in and then I decided to really explore what that meant. And my father lives in the Dominican Republic. He's been poor his whole life. And, you know, I was looking at it from my perspective. I didn't want to hate him. Yeah. I just didn't want to. I wanted to find love in my heart for him. So I sat down and started exploring all of this stuff. And I was like, yo, he is poor. His child came from America.
Not the first, you know, fourth question. You want to know about your daughter. Why she wants to know about me. Not
I got to know the first three questions first.
Though. I know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What were the first three questions?
You know, the first thing he asked me about my mom. He asked me how my mom was doing. He cried. You know, he asked me about how things were going for me. You know, he asked me about me, but it was just, I was getting ready to leave because I was only there for 2 days. And he gave me a hug and then he whispered in my ear, I'm gonna need you to give me some money. And I was devastated. I left. I didn't talk to him for a minute. And, you know, they had mics on me because we were recording a documentary. Mm-hmm. We were in production.
Mm-hmm.
And so all those people heard it. Mm-hmm. And they were like, they felt bad for me.
Yeah.
And
did you give him money?
I did.
Mm. Why did I know she did? Mm-hmm. I know you did.
What's funny about that?
How much
man?
Was it?
I'm not gonna say that, but I was paying him to go away. At that moment, I was like, I'm gonna just, cause I know he's struggling, but I was like, this is it. This is the cheapest amount of money that I'm gonna give away. Mm. And then I had to go do some work, some inner work.
Did you learn any, did you learn to give grace to your parents or just realizing they were just human?
Yes.
Yeah.
My mom. Absolutely. You know, who knows what my daughter and my son are going to say about me when they, you
Facts.
Know, you know what I mean? Like, we all think we got it right. You think that because you're not your parents and you're That's not right. struggling like your parents were, that they had the best shoes. You never know what the kids are going to say. And so my mom had her first kid when she was 14 and I didn't know that. I found out when I was writing the book and that baby died.
Mm-hmm.
And the father of the baby died playing Russian roulette.
What?
Wow.
So that was all before I was even born. She was a kid. So I was like, how am I going to sit here and judge my mother? Like, I mean, you know.
The traumas and stuff she was dealing with, you know.
I was born into it. And and it was generational. My grandmother had her first kid when she was 13. My mom was sexually abused at home. So she was trying to get out. You know what I mean? Like, I can't do that to her. And even still with all of that, she raised four amazing kids. Like, none of us have ever been in trouble. We're all productive. Who does that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Ida walked in here and was telling us about an interview she did with Gayle King.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
What did you say Gayle King said to you?
Yeah, she said, girl, you've been through some things. You know what is interesting, though? She read the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I did an interview a couple of days ago with somebody who didn't read the book. And when I walked in, they were like, girl, your book's so funny. And I was like,
oh, my God.
Oh, see?
Damn.
That's why I don't.
I just respect people that were like, you know, I didn't read it, so tell me about it. But she was like, you're so funny. And I was like, ooh.
It's not that type of book.
Yo, who is that? Who is that?
Nah.
Don't do it.
All right.
Well, you know, when Jess and I walked in, and Charlamagne was looking at the book, and he was very interested in the chapter that said pizza and penis.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was the one that he went straight to.
He went straight to pizza and penis.
Because I wanted to know about Carlos. I heard that was your uncle. I wanted to know what was up with him.
We definitely talked about Carlos.
Yeah.
Man, nothing about no pizza and penis.
But he saw pizza and penis. And he didn't even see pizza. He just saw and penis.
That's not true.
And he was like, I need to ask about this. That's true. Need to get into it.
You know what's funny? It's Gayle King was like, that she was like, I enjoyed this chapter. The chapter is about me getting sexually abused. And so it's not.
Y'all feel stupid now. I hope no, both of y'all feel no. dumb as shit.
No.
Y'all thought y'all ate with that one.
I ain't gonna lie. Yeah, I do feel
you.
Stupid. Yeah,
good,
but shut up.
Good.
All right, go ahead.
This is, y'all got some good chemistry here. it's, you know, it was, I want people to be free. Like, I want people who've been through the stuff I've been through to read this and say, I'm gonna be all right. I didn't want to do trauma porn. Like, it's not just, woe is me, my life has been bad. It's at every turn is me turning around and say, I'm gonna turn this, I'm gonna flip this into this. And this is how those things became jokes.
And you think a comedian can even have material without trauma?
Yes, I think we have a spectrum of comedy and we need, Sinbad was not trauma driven and we love Sinbad and undeniably one of the funniest.
He's shout to Sinbad too.
Clean, he's healing.
He's healing well, yeah.
Yeah, clean comedy. I do think so. We need that. We need, especially people of color. We can't all be the color purple. Like,
right.
We need some levity. We need to have comedians who are lighthearted and do jokes about things. Everybody doesn't have to be deep and, you know, that's pretentious. You know, I think some of us we ain't have a Carrot Top. Like, Carrot Top is a millionaire Vegas.
Yeah.
We've never had a comedian like that can just be, you know, why we always have to have the burden of walking around being the heaviness.
Yeah.
But it's because we black and brown. Like, it's a certain privilege that comes with being a Carrot Top. To, you know?
Yeah, but we need one. We need somebody walking around with props and shit. Just, you know.
I wonder if Kevin is the closest thing we got to Carrot Top.
Kevin Hart?
No. Have you ever been on a Carrot Top show?
No.
Oh.
Why would I go to a
How
are
you
going to
compare him to Kevin Hart? Because Kevin Hart talks about his experiences, his
does,
life as well.
I'm just talking about like.
Mad.
Yeah,
you got mad. You were like, how you going to compare Kevin?
He got kicked out of a Kevin Hart show. He ever tell you that story?
Oh, no, I didn't know
Kevin
that.
Kicked his dumb ass out because he recorded. He pulled out his phone.
I was not recording.
Yes, he was.
But did you get kicked out?
I did get kicked out.
Okay.
I was
he was
Kevin,
trying to bootleg the show.
It was not. It's not true. It was actually in Philly.
Okay.
Kevin was performing. My phone started to ring. So they tell you in those shows, do not pull your phone out. But you know, when you got kids, when your phone rings, you pick it up.
Yeah.
So I went to try to pick it up like kind of on the low. But you know, the light is bright. Sure did kick my ass out.
Good.
Yeah.
And Kevin see me getting kicked out too. It was like, all right, NBC later.
That's oh, right. Wow.
That's right. I have no problem with that. None whatsoever.
Wow.
Now talk to us about how junkies and prostitutes assisted your mom.
My mom was the person she was dating at the time beat her. She was pregnant and he left her for dead in the park, in Central Park. She was 9 months pregnant. And it was the junkies and the prostitutes that were around who took her to the hospital and saved her life. So she's my mother is not a respecter of persons. She lives that Bible life. Like, she feeds anybody. She's so wounded, but she'll never forget. She does not look down on anybody. And so we were never allowed to do that. We could never make fun of somebody because, you know, whatever it was, she'd be like, don't do that. She will always say it was the prostitutes and the junkies. That's what they called them, not the people. And she was like, those are the people who saved your brother's life. And so we were raised to just, you know, that's how we all are. All
treat everybody with respect.
Yeah. Either when this becomes a movie or a miniseries, is it going to be a dramedy or a horror movie? What the hell?
Nah, it's a dramedy.
A dramedy?
I'm developing a TV show now. No, it's going to be a dramedy. We got to laugh at it.
Yeah.
How difficult was it to write this?
It was hard as hell.
And how long did it take?
Because I wrote my own book. There's no ghostwriter. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, it took me 2.5 years, but I've been working on that book for 7 years. But you know, like you say, you're going to write a book. And you think, because you got the ideas and you got the stories. Mm-hmm. But when you start writing them down and that publisher, that editor is like, I need 80,000 words.
That's right.
It becomes a whole different. You're like, damn, I could just tell you. When you write the story down, it's 2 pages. You're like, that's it. I got it. But now you got to go in and you got the details. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the hardest things I ever did. One of the greatest lessons for me not to take anything for granted. Because, you know, these authors have been real snobby towards me. Like, even people of color that I've reached out to and I've been posting about their books, and they all been kind of like, kind of greasy with me. Mm-hmm. And it's because I'm a comedian stepping into their world and they're like, here goes another one. They're going to do a book and then they're going to bounce. And I was like, no, I've been writing my whole life. My stand up is writing. My TV shows are writing. You know, this book is writing, the movies I've written. I'm a real writer. And I don't need y'all validation because y'all goofy for that. But I understand that, you know, they do this all day long. And then celebrities will come in, do books. Mm-hmm. They do the press and then they out. They're like, that's just one more notch on their belt. Mm-hmm. They don't really assume the role of author. Where I could write books until I die. Like I would like to.
Was it good therapy or bad therapy? Because you had to relive a lot of the stuff, I'm sure, trauma that you had since a kid. So sometimes you push it out of your brain so you don't have to think about it. But when you're writing a book, you got to dive deep into it. It can't just be like two pages, like you said.
It was traumatic to relive it, but I needed to do it so I could heal. Like I needed to forgive so I could move on. Because you know what? That's the thing about forgiveness. It's for you. Right. You think it's for the other person. I ain't forgiving them. What do they say? You know, revenge is like drinking poison and hoping the enemy dies. I needed to forgive these people, like all of them. My stepfather, the one who got his ass whooped on the bus stop for being racist. Like I needed to just let it go. And I want somebody else to read it and also let it go. Like your life can be so great when you forgive somebody. That doesn't mean you got to hang out with them.
Right.
You don't have to forget. I choose to forget. But it's freedom.
I'm realizing forgiveness isn't linear, though.
No, it's not.
Because you gotta remind yourself, okay, I forgave him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you gotta remind, and you gotta accept it. Acceptance is probably one of the hardest things we deal with. People always say, love yourself, love yourself. Mm-hmm. You can love yourself. Acceptance is where we thrive, right? Being able to say, I'm okay with the fact that I'm never going to be a size 2 again. Mm. You know what I mean? Like that is freedom for me.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, love is beautiful, but love, what Tina Turner said, what's love got to do with it? I think acceptance has been the greatest journey for me. And yeah, I forgave them people.
What did writing the book teach you about illegitimacy?
You know, that illegitimacy and feeling those feelings of not feeling invalidated are crippling for most people. We all battle with it, whether it's because you dark skin or you don't speak English, you got an accent, you're in a wheelchair. Like we all struggle with it. And they can give it a term for every single sector of it. But the truth is that we all battle with it and we cannot give it to somebody else to declare it for us. Mm-hmm. We cannot. That's my favorite scene in Jerry Maguire was when Regina King looked Cuba Gooding in the eye and said, we validate our worth. Mm-hmm. And that was like the most powerful thing I had seen at that age because I was much younger. You got to validate your own worth. Mm-hmm. In comedy, you know, people are always saying who they think is funny, who is great, you cannot let anybody else tell you who you are. Because if you give them the power to feed you, you give them the power to starve you.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
That validation has to come from within.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask, you know, one of the producers after reading the book was like, she has to hate all men. Like, damn near all men did her dirty in this book. Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about men after, you know, them going through the process of a lot of men that did you dirty, a lot of men that were foul to you?
If you read the book, then you would see that I adore my uncles. My uncle Carlos passed away. Yeah. And my uncle Raymond. My uncles raised me. My uncles together, they were a transformer. They all got together and they became the father that I needed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they used to be hustlers. They were on the streets. But they have always been my heroes. I love men so much. I made a great one. My son is an amazing human being.
Amazing.
And I don't hate men. And I hate the rhetoric, like all of this stuff that goes on social media with men and women. It is so toxic and unnecessary. It's just divide and conquer just keeps getting deeper and deeper in terms of what happens with our communities. I uphold men and I, you know, I hold them accountable, but I hold women accountable too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not basic. So I don't delve in that. Men ain't, you know, it's some men that are trash. It's a bunch of women that are trash too. You know, it's some non-binary people that are trash.
Yeah, right.
So everybody gets it, you know? So I don't hate men.
Yeah.
I think another thing people will learn from is like, you know, growing up without your father's last name.
Yeah.
How did you feel after your mom told you why?
I felt worse because she gave it to me so casually. She was so like cavalier about it, but it was because that was what she knew. She grew up, she didn't have her father's last name. You know, it was like, it just means you don't have your dad's last name. Like, it's all good. For me, it was a stamp that it made me a victim to I thought in my head, that means I'm going to get mistreated. People know my father is not around. Because my idea of a daddy was protection, you know.
Provide.
You know, you're very good. Mm-hmm. You. I don't know if you are in real life, but on social media, you're a great
dad. I am.
No,
because, you know, people allow social media.
But you know what I'm saying? No, you know, people do it all for the, you know, but
I know some Instagram daddies. Some FaceTime fathers. Mm-hmm. That's what I call them.
Man, FaceTime fathers. I ain't messy because I can put some people on.
Right.
I know some stories, but
yeah.
The thing was that I thought that because that's what I thought a father was, it made me feel vulnerable. Like I was like, now anybody can do anything to me, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't true. My grandmother was walking around with that gun, making sure that she protected us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ida, man, your story is crazy.
It is.
even having a child, your mom is a hoe, like.
Oh yeah, because you know what? That's what kids would do when they see your mom in the hood. Everything is fair game.
Oh,
there's no when you playing them dozens. Those kids will be like, "That's why your pappy got cancer." Like it's the kids are evil.
It was crackhead son. If you was a child, if your daddy was a crackhead, your mom's like, crackhead son, crackhead daughter.
Yeah, that's how we process the pain. That's how we deal with it. And when somebody said that mama, the creepiest thing about the whole thing was that the lady who said my mama was a hoe was the biggest hoe on the block.
Like, that's how you know?
And she was talking about my mom because she thought that because her kids had the same father and we didn't, that she was better than my mom. Mm-hmm. And I was like, how sad. Now that I'm an adult, I'm like, what a sad existence that's where you pop your collar. Not something you did positive in the world, but my kids got the same daddy and they got their father's last name. Mm-hmm. So I'm better than you. And I was like, nah. That's when I started snapping. I was like, no, she's a hoe.
Do you believe in people being hoes?
What?
Do you believe in people being hoes?
Oh.
Well, you know, it depends on who you allow. I mean, I always told my daughter, you determine your hole. Don't you let the streets do it.
Yeah.
You know what your threshold is. Mm-hmm. If we start allowing, I mean, that's very patriarchal. That's where it's rooted in. And people, men get to call women hoes all day long and assess their value while they out there hoeing.
That's right.
Spreading diseases, doing all kinds of stuff. Not all men, but y'all know what I'm talking about. So do I believe in the concept of hoe? You know, I think it's nuanced. You know, do we perpetuate some of that stuff? If we telling little girls that if you have, you don't let nobody take your goods if they're not giving you money, because we like to uphold that rhetoric.
Yeah.
And then, but that is why little girls volunteer for cartels on the border and say, I want to work because I want to have, you know, Gucci or whatever. So there's a fine line. We need to have honest conversations about that. The terminology of hoe is something I rebuke because it comes from toxic men when they are telling women that they're hoes. Are you willing to turn the camera onto yourself call yourself a hoe? Because your value doesn't drop in society like ours does. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, we all had our moments where we were a little more playful and then our moments where we were a little more dedicated and serious. And we should be able to do that, right?
Yeah, I believe in the concept of hoeing if it goes both ways. If you're going to call the guy the hoe for the nasty, and we do it. Like, we know some nasty
men hoes?
Yes, some nasty dick.
We do too.
Yeah.
You know, so if it goes both ways, I believe in the concept. But if you only just saying that to a woman, I don't respect
it. I mean, I respect that. And if that's all things have to be fair. Mm-hmm. You know, they love to count women's partners. You'll say, oh, she was with such and such.
Yeah.
But then you see the dudes and you're like, but damn, like he's been with everybody.
Yeah.
You know?
But he gets praised for that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? No. Like, you had that, you had her. And then it's like, dang, you mess with him, and him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did.
And I don't know, like, do you use condoms with everybody? Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's we do, yeah. So I think that if you're going to use hoes, let it be across the board. But if you only use
you sing that hoes out, too. You can use hoes.
Yes, I like that. Because we use it. I mean, I'm not going to come on. Up here and act like I'm pious, like I'm some, you know, we don't do that. We be calling people hoes too, but we talk about dudes like we talk about women. Like, we not just sitting here, you know, women love to do that too, because women, they have socialized us to hate each other. So when we love to call other women, you know, I'm not like that. Yes, you are. You've had your moments.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah.
And also the other thing about the hoeing, nobody would know who's doing what if everybody would just shut the fuck up. Like, how do you even find out a person is a hoe?
Yeah.
Who's the one who's... Is every guy saying that they slept with this? Woman, you're a man, everybody.
Yeah, you've been there before, probably in your younger South Carolina days.
I don't believe most of these guys, though. Yeah. These guys be, like, guys be lying. Like, yeah, guys be like, oh, she a hoe. And I'd be like, oh, you hit? No. So how do you know?
Because my man told her.
Yeah,
that,
my partner said.
Yeah, it's talked about.
Yeah. But everybody just need to shut up.
The thing is, that, like, do you really care? Like, honestly, the thing about social media that has really been, my management is always like, you're really terrible at social media. And I am. But I'll say this, like, I'm always watching people, like, the people who are like, I'm letting the haters know. Nobody cares. Like, the people who are like, I'll show them. Who are you showing?
Yeah.
People will look at it, they'll comment, they'll talk about it, and then they move on to the next thing. Because they're consuming it like Doritos. They don't care. You put so much effort into shutting your haters down.
Yeah.
God bless James Hanna, a brilliant comedian who passed away. He used to say, people of colors, haters are their imaginary friends. Because he was like, they don't exist.
That's right.
He was like, it's you know, we put so much weight on that.
Yeah.
Do you really care? If I don't care who's a hoe. Like, they talk about J-Lo all the time. And I'm like, how does that affect my food? Like, how does that affect my mama? You know, right. I don't give a damn. Like, it's for a minute and then you move on. So, just remember, when you are directing all that energy to the people who you really think you're shutting down, they don't care. Nobody cares.
That's right. Yeah. Now, it's almost the holidays. These memoirs cause problems.
Oh, yeah.
How does your family feel about you revealing so much in the book?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the only people who read the book so far are my aunt and uncle, the normal ones that are in D.C. Because half of my family is in Florida, and the other half is in like the DC, Virginia area, in the DMV.
Okay, DMV.
Yeah, they the normal ones. So they're cool. They all right. I'm going to sit with my mom and go through the book because I want to make sure my mom isn't. Yeah, I can't. I don't ever want to demonize her. So I want her to understand where that came from. And I'm going to read the back first with her because, you know, I give her grace throughout the book, but I want her to know that she's still the queen.
Wow. Are you dreading that conversation?
It's still good.
It needs to be had. She still has to be accountable. She was still my mom, you know, like I still went through a lot of stuff in life, you know, as a kid, and she should, you know, she said to me, I'm so sorry for the things that I put you through. I was a kid. But you know, I think it's a necessary conversation for us to heal. She needs to forgive her mother. She's still holding on to things about my grandmother's dead. I'm like, bro, you got to let it go. Like, she's gone, you know, and you have to move on.
I don't think there's too many things that are more freeing than an apology from your parents.
I got it. I got it.
That's why I say I apologize now as a father to my young kids, just because I know how it felt to never hear that from a parent you feel like might have did you dirty.
Yeah, and amnesia. Like, my mom used to beat my ass, and now when I talk about it, she's like, I never hit you. And I'm like, what? Aww. This is revisionist history at its best. She used to beat my, she fractured my ankle. I wrote an essay in there. She did. My mother was, because my mom got hit with an extension cord.
Me too.
So she felt like, because she hit us with a belt, that it wasn't
as bad as the extension cord.
And it wasn't. But I was like, yo, and that switch, my grandmother, we used to
go pick it.
That's a people of color thing. In Spanish, it's called la varita. And they'd be like, and she go get vete busca tu varita. Go get your switch. And there was no winning in that. There was not a switch that didn't hurt. That didn't exist.
Yeah.
You know?
Jesus. All right. Man. The book is out right now. Make sure you get it. Legitimate, we appreciate you for joining us.
Yes. Thank you for having me. I appreciate y'all.
What else you got coming up, Ida? Because you always working.
So I'm directing another special, a comedy special. I'm trying to direct as many women of color comedy special because I want them to get out. Marcellus did really well on HBO. I'm doing one with Gina Brion. I'm shooting her special in December, and I'm developing two TV shows because I want to not just work, but I want to be surrounded by people who look like me, sound like me, you know, people of color, Black people, and I want to put some people to work.
There you go.
So I'm developing the shows right now, and I'm getting ready to direct this special.
Dope.
That is amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's Ida Rodriguez.
Go get Legitimate Kid right now.
And it's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
And the book is not funny, dummy.
Thank you.
Ass up early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development,
and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways you probably haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Questlove, and Cate Blanchett. In recent weeks, I talked to actor Dan Levy, director Ava DuVernay, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating.
I got a big heart, and I'm very forgiving, but, like, don't abuse it. It's been abused enough.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia.
Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to the one and only Ryan Seacrest.
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. It's getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine. And I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.